Welcome to the Appliance Educator Podcast, presented by Z-Line Kitchen and Bath, attainable luxury designed in Lake Tahoe. On today's episode of the podcast, our friend Matt lets us know the secrets behind a perfect cup of coffee and some secrets on some excellent leadership. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Appliance Educator Podcast. As always, it's your host, Drew, and I'm joined by my somewhat sleepy partner in crime here, Nick. You ready? Ready to get pumped, bud?
Yes, we brought in the coffee expert because I need it today.
Absolutely. So to turn over to our coffee expert, he's ready to go. We've got Matt Deacon, the business coach for Northern Central California and Northern Nevada for Dutch Bros. Welcome, Matt.
Hello.
So
happy to be here. Thank you guys for letting me be a part of this.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been a few months in the works, and we finally got our schedules to connect it on the point.
We got it in.
And we're ready. We're going to get caffeinated. We're going to get you pumped. So if you're at home listening, be ready. Raise a cup. We're going to get into it. And we're going to start with business coach for Dutch Brothers.
Right.
What it is? How did you get there?
Yeah. So I've been with Dutch Bros for about 12 years now. I started off as a night guy, just right fresh out of college, had just gotten married, was like, need to pick up another job. And a few of my friends had worked there that I went to college with, and it seemed like a pretty freaking cool place to work. And so had to do some hard work to get in. But once I did, man, I fell in love with it. And I was like, because I thought this was just going to be like a part-time job and a couple months, find the thing that I'm going to be, pouring my career into. 6 months in, I was like, I'm sold, man.
Yeah.
And then once I found out that, this is something that you could do as a career, I was like, let's do it. How do I get in there? And it was off to the races, man. That was 12 years ago. It's kind of crazy. Started off as a night guy, worked my way up to operator, got to open the stands here in Reno, Nevada.
A lot of them opened quick too. There's Dutch Bros everywhere in Reno now.
And they're always slamming. Always. Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of wild, man. Opened the first two within the first year, and that was just such a journey. Maybe we can get into that part a little bit later, but spent a couple years here, and then got a job as a business coach with our headquarters. And so now I work with the operators in Northern California, Central California, and Northern Nevada. And we just talk speed, quality, customer service, operations, culture, and how to take the stands from point A to point B, and just keep growing our people and our customers, and that's it.
Awesome. I gotta ask, so what were you going to school for originally?
Oh man, you guys are gonna laugh. So my major was outdoor leadership, and that's the same look I get every single
break
time.
It down. It's like,
okay, what is that? As much as I had
to
explain
college
business
for
coach.
Be a camp counselor.
But that's almost exactly it. Yeah. So outdoor leadership is, I mean, they call it outdoor recreation or outdoor education, depending on what college you go to. But basically it boils down to program management and facilitation and creation. So it's like, what do you want to do? Right. So a lot of people focus on summer camps, but you can also do things like character development, team building.
Okay.
So you mean like a lot of
corporate retreats and training programs.
Right. I mean, you could do all like the basic stuff of like, ants on a log, where you have to try and, get people to move around on a log. That's like one straight log and you got like six people on it, or you do the challenge courses that are like 30 feet in the air, and you've got to do that leap of faith at the end where you're like strapped in, you have to reach out and try and grab the trapeze. But you can also go to like adventure stuff. So like, we're going to take a week and we're going to take you backpacking, and we're going to spend some time in self-reflection, meditating. And so, I mean, it's really a bunch of different avenues you can go into, but some of it's training as well. So it's like, if you want to learn how to do a specific outdoor activity, right? So expeditioning was one I was really into. You learn the activity, and then you learn how to teach it. And then you add in the other elements of like character development and all that kind of stuff if you want to do it. So that's what kind of helped me in Dutch Bros was, I got to create a training program and then help facilitate people like coming into Dutch Bros, and then their journey about how to be a part of the culture, how like what we do to serve people, and then how to grow in leadership. And that was kind of the process I got to use that for.
Okay. Yeah.
So kind of a weird, like, how'd you get from there to there? it was really just...
I can see the connection.
Yeah, I see the merger of it all coming together for sure, and especially with a corporate company like Dutch Bros where they... That's a big business model is how to keep people and how to train them and do it in-house.
What was the moment? 6 months in, you're hustling at night. You care about character development, training. Culture is obviously big to you, right? From what you're already studying. But what's that moment in those first 6 months that was like, this is my path? What locked it in for you with Dutch Bros?
Was it the coffee?
Was it? Oh, definitely part of the coffee. Which is the funny thing is like when I first started at Dutch Bros, I didn't even drink coffee.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh, you're a convert.
Yeah. I was like, because that's the thing. Like, our menu has so much stuff on it, right? So I got to hear and hear, man. But our menu has so much stuff on it. And so I was like, smoothies only, dude. And then I found out about this thing called the double chocolate mocha. And I was like, oh, hell yeah, dude. You can get that blended, I'm in. And then next thing you know, the farther I got up into leadership, it went from like, you know, that double chocolate mocha, blended double chocolate mocha to a small hot 6-shot Americano at 4 in the morning.
Oh, so ready to jam.
Yes, yeah. So you can just get ready to freaking go. But the moment for me was the people I was working with just cared deeply about like what my journey was looking like working with them. And it wasn't just about, okay, how do I retain you as an employee? It was like, hey man, how are you? Like, what are you doing? Like, do you want to do this? Cool, I can teach you how to do it. But if not, like, what direction are you going in?
Yeah.
And they cared about that part as much as they cared about me being an employee for them and, you know, doing what we care about. And that was the moment I was like, that's it, man.
Something you can really take home, right? It. Fulfilling your journey, fulfilling others' journey.
Yeah, because...
just feeling appreciated.
Yeah, I mean, my wife and I wanted to make... like, we wanted to start our own business originally. And, like, later on down the road, they had the same elements, which is just, like, caring about the people that work with you. And being able to pour into them, and then also having a business that's community oriented, right? Which is a whole other part, which is just making regulars and like, you know, getting to be a part of that, which we might be able to get into later. But that was the moment I was like, oh, these values already exist here. I'm already in it. Let's go for it.
Absolutely. Shareholders in the larger sense, right? It's not just a dividend at the end of the day. It's the time we're spending involved in this, whether you're a customer, a community member, or a team member, right?
Mm, that's definitely a part of it. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
a better way to do business too, because it's going to save you money in the long run when you don't have to keep hiring employees and you're growing from the inside. And it's just, you know who you're getting because you've trained them the way you want them to be trained.
Yeah, it's definitely
the next direction.
Well, that's definitely a metric of success for us. Is like, okay, who do we have on the bench? Like, and you know, taking a pretty serious look about like what's it look like. If it's not there, what do we need to do to get there? Like who can we be spending time with? Who can we be intentional with, to build that out? Because that's like for us has been our biggest source of success is just that pouring into people and making this a place where it's magnetic and people like want to be a part of it. So.
And just becoming a coffee expert in the process.
Just a
byproduct.
A little bit. Yeah. You know, not a. What's a coffee savant, but you know,
let me ask this as we like segue into the coffee conversation. Favorite drink to drink, favorite drink to make.
Oh man. Okay. Favorite drink to drink, cold brew through and through.
Mm.
No questions asked. Don't have to think about it. Right. We've got our nitro cold brew. My favorite thing to do is you can buy it by the can if you want. Or you can buy it, or you can just have them pour it at the shop. But you get the nitro can, and you have to shake it up, right? But then you pour it into a cold glass, like a frosted glass. Oh, it's money, right?
Can you explain what nitro means
in
coffee world?
Because I order it all the time, and I just know that's the
like
one I want.
Right, but I feel like it's just coffee that comes from a keg, right? Or am I completely off on this?
No, it's kind of wild, man. So nitro for... there's so many ways you can do it. It's just nitro infused. I mean, as much as like you put, you know, carbonation in water or any of the fizzy drinks, you add nitro to these drinks and it gives it a completely different texture.
Mm.
Right. We have cool cans, which are just the cans of sparkling water that we use. People call it, you know, spicy water because carbonation, right? As soon as you drink it, you get that fuzzy, not the fuzzy, that...
It's not mayonnaise water, right?
Yeah,
no. But like snap, crackle, and
pop
of
water. Pop in your mouth, man. But like when something's nitro infused, it's smooth. Yeah. Like there's no, you know, there's no pop in your mouth. It's
that
just
Guinness
like,
feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause that's what I'm kind of seeing like bloom when I'm looking at that coffee, right? Mm-hmm. That like awesome texture that the nitro cold brew has.
You see it cascade down the glass and oh man. And the same thing happens with these nitro infused drinks. So there's different ways you can do it inside the can. So for us, you just have to shake it to activate it, and nitro infuses into the coffee. And so as soon as you open it, sometimes there's a pretty big pop, but then you pour it in the glass and it's all good to go, man. So, but some places, yeah, use kegs, and they have the nitrous infused when as soon as you activate the keg. But I mean, other places have like this little ball at the bottom of the can. So when you shake it, like I think some Guinness cans have
it. Yeah, kind
of
like a Guinness. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
I mean, and there's no need to shake those, by the way. You know, if anyone's listening, don't shake that can. Open it. But for ours, shake to activate.
All right. Yeah. And then favorite drink to make?
Favorite drink to make?
Cold brew.
Yeah. Dude, it's easy. No, we just, I mean, for us, we make them in pitchers, which is really easy to make. But if I'm in the shop, honestly, very sentimental. So if I'm in there, my favorite thing to drink at one point was just like a little 8 ounce honey latte.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was just delicious, man. Like, you know, 4:45 in the morning, as soon as you open the shop and you just need something with just a little bit of flavor, not wild amount of sugar, mm-hmm. a little bit of honey, espresso, and some like whole milk. Ooh,
smooth.
Yeah, and just like the right amount of foam on top, and it's nice and tight. Like, there's nothing could beat it.
Because I am a nitro cold brew guy, but I will say when it comes to Dutch Bros and I want that treat, I am that ice golden eagle. Man, it's
let's go.
It's just easy lock.
Yeah, man. Yeah. It's such a treat. Those things are such a treat.
They are.
Especially when they're made with half and half, man. It's like.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
But if you haven't tried one of our mochas, man, I really believe in my heart we have the best mocha out there. Like, it's just delicious. It's thick, it's creamy, it's chocolatey, and the espresso still cuts through, so it's not just like you're drinking a melted candy bar. Like, mm-hmm. It's delicious.
I'm such a basic person on coffee. Like, it's either black drip, cold brew, or espresso. But that's it. That's all. I don't venture out.
Same. I've had my years as a barista. Caffeine is what I'm after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cold and dark, hot and dark. That's what I'm after.
Yeah. But that's what I love about coffee, man. There's so many ways to get it, right? It just depends on what you're looking for. So you could be looking for, right? I just want to, you know, sit down at a table, like bust out a book and just like sip on something tasty. Or it's like, I need to pop this can. I need to slam it down. I need to go because I need to wake the F up. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what do you want out of this?
That's me. That's the only time that I got coffee going.
This guy doesn't sleep. Like, so ever. I'm sure that's part of the formula. Yeah.
I had to get this second round today. I'm sorry. It's not Dutch Bros, but it's what I have.
It's what you had, man. That's my fault for not bringing it. So
you're vetted. You know your way around the caffeine. We've verified that. So now the real question comes, you know, you have everything at your disposal when you're at Dutch Bros at home. You know, for our audience, they're always looking at like, what do I bring into my kitchen? What am I going to make? We've talked everything from smoking ribs to making bread to doing a full kitchen remodel.
Right.
The difference when you're setting up that kitchen, if you were setting up your ideal home space to make coffee at home.
Oh, man.
Just give me the dream list, man.
Yeah, what do we need?
Oh, man. Well, again, this is one thing I love about coffee, right? Because there's, if you really want coffee, you can get it.
Sure.
Like, even if like on the, you know, this end of the spectrum where you've got cowboy coffee where it's like throw it in a sock, beat it against a rock, put it in some hot water and let it do its thing and then, you know, drink it.
Yeah, I'm doing a pour over at home right now. And
yeah.
And then we're seeing in appliances, everybody's moving to these like super fancy built-in wall mount mm-hmm. coffee makers. Like that's the new hot thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because you've got like Chemex, AeroPress, Pourovas, pour overs. You've got like mocha pots. You have like Nespressos and Keurigs.
Mm-hmm.
I got an espresso in my office, and that baby gets used every day.
Dude, they make a pretty good, a pretty quality product and consistent, which I think is if you're looking for a machine that does it, like mm-hmm. you know, pretty cool. But I would love to have. If it's my dream kitchen, just like a little single head espresso unit, like a La Marzocco, which is the company that we use, just single head, like nothing crazy, but just something I can just like get that feel in. Cause there's something about, again, you know, being sentimental about making your coffee, just taking the portafilter off for the first time, knocking it out, going over your grinder, which is the second piece. If you want good espresso, you need a good grinder to get you good grind, to give you good espresso because of all
the there are certain grain people should be shooting for? Because that's my thing. I've used the grinder at the store. I've got pre-ground. I've done where I've tried to mill it, you know, with like one of those antique style hand. The crank ones. Yeah. And what should you be looking for in that coffee grain? Because I do just pour over on a screen now, like hot water, and just let it slow and
right,
go.
Right. But... Well, that's a tricky part. It depends on what you're trying to do, right? Like if you're trying to make espresso, you're generally going to need a really a finer grind. Or a way to be able to control that grind, because you can have it really coarse. So you start off with a whole bean, and you put it in the grinder, right? And it either chops it up or it literally grinds it down, depending on what kind of grinder you have. But if you're grinding it down, the finer that you get, the better the espresso is going to be. But again, you can have it too fine or you can have it too coarse. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have to be able to find that right middle ground.
Yeah, that too fine, you don't want to be...
The silt
back.
Well, exactly. Or the other part of that too is like if it is too fine, then the hot water doesn't have enough time to extract the oil for the flavor and the caffeine. So it's like you have to find the balance. So if you really wanted to do it right, start off with a good grinder, and then you can get the espresso machine. That's my personal belief there. But if you wanted to do anything else, right? Like I would just say one that you can at least. I don't know, grind it up, because you have the ones with the blades in it, right? Mm-hmm. Those aren't bad, but I probably wouldn't use one of those if I had my own espresso machine. So
sure,
something with a hopper and one that actually uses burrs to grind it down rather than a blade is what I'd be going for sure.
Okay,
because if you want to do cold brew, it's either really coarse or whole bean, right? You just let it chill in. Whatever container you have for anywhere between like 48 hours and 72 hours, you put that baby in the fridge.
Okay, longer than I thought too. That's good, because I'm always trying to do it the cheap way, where I'm like, well, I didn't finish half the pot. I'll put it in, and when I get home from work, it's cold brew, right?
That counts.
I mean,
that counts, man. It's
poured over
cold,
some ice.
It's cold brew,
yeah,
bro.
It's cold. It's, yeah,
that's what it is.
Yeah.
Now for cold brew, man. I mean, it's definitely. So I can't give you a good recipe, right? That's not me. But like whole bean. You let it sit, but the key is depending on what recipe you do use, sometimes just don't drink it straight.
Okay.
Because it would be like drinking straight fuel, man. It's just like, boom, like, you know, you got to water that baby down.
Sometimes that's what I'm looking for, though. I know.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, more power to you. Yeah, you're not going to sleep for a couple of days. Yeah. Your heart rate monitor is going to be going crazy.
For sure. Yeah. So then when it comes to milk, because I had a little barista experience, and I know one of the biggest telltale signs was someone who's just going to like break and destroy the milk trying to foam it up, or someone who knows what they're doing to really get that, like, the right amount of air temperature in there. I mean,
the right butterfly on top.
Oh, I'm not even in that league. Skill. I'm talking about people just trying to foam it, man, because I've seen everything from just what I would say is absolute murder to someone who's making like this perfect fluffy cloud. I mean,
yeah.
Any insight on that? Is that what you're bringing into your coffee at all?
Again, with that espresso machine, hopefully it has a steamer on it, right? That would be ideal, because you want to put some love and attention. That's like, you know, pulling the shot, yes, but that's only, you know, that could be anywhere between, you know, 15 and 26 seconds, depending on what kind of espresso you're trying to pull. But then it could, like, that's what the fun is, steaming the milk. That's where the fun is, man. You can definitely, like, go to some places and it's espresso with hot milk in it, right, and there's no foam on it, which some people drink, and you know, there's no knocks against them for doing that. But I mean, if you want me to give you a demonstration on how to do it, I can totally do that, but you just gotta let it breathe just a little bit and let the motion do the work, man. You don't have to like let it breathe, like I call it massive breaths. You want to make those little sweet little kissing sounds, not just like
the little puffs.
Puffs. If it sounds like a rocket trying to take off, it's probably not working right.
No,
it's not the gentle touch that we're looking for.
Yeah.
Got it.
So there's all this like intimacy and romance in making the coffee.
I'm telling you, man, sentimental. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'm just romanticizing the idea.
No, I think that's beautiful.
And I'm really trying to put that love in the drink, man.
It's that's making me think about coffee in a whole different way now.
I'm yeah.
Just like, all right, well, I'd enjoy it. I really do. Maybe I should just give it a little love back as it gives the love to me.
Mm. Mm. So then I guess where I want to pivot then is like, if we talk about QSR, mm-hmm. and you're talking about this, you know, sentimentality.
Right.
How do you balance that? And what is QSR? Educate the audience here.
Oh, yeah. QSR. Yeah. QSR is quick service restaurants, which is an industry that we're definitely a part of. And this is, you know, something that we focus on. We have three core values: speed, quality, customer service. And we put a lot of emphasis on that last one because without the people that we serve, we don't get to do the other two.
Sure.
Right. So we put a lot of emphasis on our culture, which I'll come back to that one. But within the QSR industry, right, like you got to have flow inside the stand. And flow is basically like how our team operates to meet those three core values. And so it's everything from being efficient on bar with either one person or multiple people, but then also being able to coordinate with our line busters outside, who are the people out there taking orders in line, because we don't have like a
the drive-up station where you talk
the box. Yeah, we don't have a talk box for people to roll up to. It's one of our values is like we really want people to be talking to people face-to-face. Again, part of our culture is just like recognizing that we're people serving people and looking for those golden opportunities to really blow someone away. Like our mission statement is that, you know, we're just looking for people to serve really well.
And but then you continually come back and see that same face every time you get comfortable with them.
Yeah.
And then why would you go anywhere else? Yeah. Those are your people.
Those are our regulars, man. For sure. For sure. But I want to come back to, I think I was probably going off on a bit of a tangent.
Tangent away, because right. I've got all kinds of questions I want to ask you about this, but break right, it down, right. You know?
Yeah. But I mean, with speed for us inside the stand, it's again, it really comes down with making sure our people are competent of the recipes and that they're trained up on how we flow inside the stand. Because without those two key elements, like operations, just it doesn't work. So you got to spend a lot of time with knowing who goes where, who does what. And then once we have that part nailed down, the rest is pretty easy. Yeah.
How much variance is there in the, like the equipment in it? Is it pretty much the same stuff and you're kind of getting people into like, hey, there's a regular flow. Is it kind of customized to each crew?
No, it's pretty much the same equipment in every stand. Right? Okay. You've got your grinders, you have your espresso machines. And then we've got a few other things in there too, that help, make drinks a little easier. So, blenders, Taylor freeze machines, that help us out a ton. And then we've got everything in the fridge too. So like the cool cans, Rebel cans, which if you guys haven't tried that stuff yet, also worth giving it a shot as like a bit of a refresher.
Okay.
You know,
a and hot then summer day drink.
Dude, yes. Yeah. We also got teas too, which are pretty good, man. So
okay.
If you're looking for something that's just going to bring you a bit of like at the end of one of those hot summer days, man, teas are the way to go. No doubt. But yeah, equipment-wise, everything has got, every shop has the same stuff. What has changed is that we've started to nail down the inside of our locations.
Okay.
So it used to be some locations would differ in size and shape and how you would flow inside the stand, but now we're pretty consistent with the build out inside the shop.
It always seems pretty lean, like the square footage, and then I see like you've got all these people hustling in there and I'm like, it's got to be pretty dialed in to get that much action out of not that much space and a lot of people in there just cranking at all these different stations. I mean, what goes into that? Because that to me sounds like kind of the magic to produce this flow you're talking about.
Well, so you're asking like how many people are inside the shop? Like
that's what I'm saying. Cause I see a bunch of people in there. I see a ton of drinks coming out, a huge line, and there's a ton of machines, but it's not a lot of space. I mean, this room where it podcasting in right now seems bigger than a lot of the space you're working with. So
yeah, which is kind of crazy. Cause I'm not sure have you guys been up to Grants Pass or like up into Oregon? Washington.
Yeah, So I used to be in the like Portland area a lot.
Right,
so
right.
I've been to I'm pretty sure one of the older Dutch Bros up there, because I mean we're talking 10 years ago getting coffee at a Dutch Bros in Oregon. Right. So
yeah. I mean so we started in Oregon 1992 with Dane and Trav under a pop up tent, you know, and that's how we started, right? Under a pop-up tent. And then they were like, well, how can we serve our customers just a little bit better? Well, most of them are driving to us, so let's do a drive-up model. And the stands, like, so our headquarters is still in Grants Pass. And if you went to see some of the shops up there, you would be like, oh my God, they're tiny. Like, no joke, smaller than a quarter of the size. But the way they can flow in there is absolutely impressive. Right. So we've had to definitely make some adjustments from when we started in those tiny stands where you can maybe fit three people.
Right.
To now, I mean, some shops can fit, you know, upwards of like, oh, geez, I don't even, I mean, you could probably fit a ton of people in the stands, but, you know, we've got teams anywhere between like, you know, 5 and 8 people plus in their working, plus people outside in the stand, or sorry, outside the stand running in the line.
Yeah. Because I just, to me, I'm always like, man, there is so much action going on in such a small space. And mm-hmm. there has to be something to make that work. Because if you just took 10 random people and threw them in a small space with a bunch of equipment, you're looking at a disaster, right?
Yeah, so, totally. And it really comes down to training. So being able to break down what the shop looks like. And one of my favorite things to do is to sit down with anybody in the shop. When they first get here, and especially our leadership, to break down what flow is going to look like, and just doing basically like a football play,
running plays.
So here's one machine, here's the second machine, here's your pit station, here's your third machine. Okay, here's how we run it with one person, two people. Here's our five-person play. Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, so the milk person goes this way, shots person goes this way, pit goes this direction. So it's fun to kind of break it down with them. so it's not just, well, I'm here and I stay here.
Right.
It's like, no, man, we can move, because that's we're here to blow minds.
I can just imagine, like, tossing the milk. Here's the ice. Got the catch. Here we go. Spin it around. Here you go, sir. Have a good day.
Oh, we've done that, man. Yeah, we've done that. I love, and that was kind of the fun stuff too, is just being able to have fun on shift, and anybody that's coming through the stand, bringing them inside. Not physically, but through the window, right?
Sure.
And then trying to invite them into the party and what's happening inside the stand. So, like, you know, if it is like in some of the smaller shops that I grew up in, you know, probably like the size of this room, like the windows were over here. You could literally just like throw a rebel behind your back, and you know, the guy on milk would catch it. And the guy, you know, someone in the car would be like, "Oh my God!" Like, yeah, we're pros. Don't worry. You didn't always make it. Sometimes you drop it and you're like, you gotta, you know, be humble.
What's some of the maintenance that goes into your machinery that you need to keep up with, and whether that's in the shops itself or at home, that you need to be aware of to keep your stuff fresh and working properly?
Right. Let me go back really quick. You were asking earlier about like what things I would have in my dream kitchen. And I was talking about the grinder. That's the one piece, right, that, needs attention, because if you want to have that really quality espresso, you got to be able to grind really well and adjust it really well. So if your burrs are getting worn out, no matter how much you adjust it, it's not going to do very much, because the blades are not sharp enough. So you know, you got to upkeep those, and depending how much it's getting used, that's what would dictate how many times you change out those burrs. But when it comes to espresso machines, the thing you have to watch out for is your water. Because in the back of those espresso machines is a big boiler with a heating element running through it. And it doesn't matter if it's gas powered or electric or whatever. If you have really hard water in your area,
the buildup.
What's that?
The buildup.
It'll build up and it'll scale and it'll calcify. So in the boiler, but also through all of your pipes and your solenoids and your jets. So again, if you're not using your machine, making sure that like it's either turned off, or if you are keeping it on all the time, you have having a descale regiment. You know, if you don't have some sort of water softener that you're using, sometimes you do it once a year. sometimes you do every, you know, 6 months, every couple of years. Again, it just comes down to use and what, you know, all that stuff. But yeah, descaling an espresso machine, massively important, because if you don't, it'll affect your product big time.
Yeah, you'll have that taste, that like kind of overcooked mineral taste.
Yeah. Yeah, or you'll go to use it and nothing comes out.
Yeah, like, just big blocked up. Yum.
Yeah.
I do have a question on like cleaning a grinder, because like for mine, it's like, I don't know, especially like if I've used mine, or like if I go to my parents and I'm looking at theirs and it's just got all that buildup in it, you know, the dust, it's a combination of like the dust and the oil, right? Like mm-hmm. the finest particles.
Right.
What's the best way to clean that? Because like, I'm always like, guys, you gotta get on top of this. It like, should I be going in there with like a dry, like a Q-tip or something, or like wash it out? What do you?
Oh man,
like a beard brush and.
That's what I'm wondering, like, because that to me is the because I'm like, well, this is an electric grinder. I can't like throw this in the dishwasher.
Yeah, no, you don't want that.
Yeah, so sure. So any tip there on people at home when they're like, yeah, I'm grinding my coffee daily, because after 6 months that thing's getting a little nasty.
Oh man. Well. Safety standards, always, you know, wash, rinse, sanitize, man.
Okay. Okay, just the basics.
Yeah, no, but when it comes to coffee stuff, yeah, with the oil buildup on it, just making sure you have the right brush for it.
Okay.
Some people use a toothbrush, but you have to watch out, because depending on what kind of grinder that you are cleaning, the toothbrush can actually like leave the bristles behind, so. Making sure that like you're using one that's not, doesn't look like it's been, you know, what's that scene in Forrest Gump where they're
scrubbing the boat?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, with the toothbrush. Yeah, they're on the floor at boot camp and he's telling about all the ways to cook shrimp. But yeah, you want to make sure you have like a brand new brush.
Okay.
But then if you're going to use soap and water, try not to, rinse it out afterwards. So you don't leave that, detergent taste in there too.
Sure.
Again, anytime you use like soap with coffee stuff, I mean, some people might yell at me for saying use soap, but that's just one way to get some of the oil off. Right. And I'm sure there's probably some better ways to do it, but, that's what I would suggest.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Just the basics, air dry, get in there.
Yeah.
Is there special brushes that are already being made to clean that kind of thing, or should we invent that now? And,
I don't know. There's so many grinders out there, man. So I can just tell you basically like, you know, what we use, right? So when we clean a grinder, we take the hopper off. And we, you know, clean the crap out of that thing, because again, you don't want the oil just to be sitting there. But then inside with the burrs, sometimes the manufacturer will send you a brush. And it's just like, it's like a 45 degree angle brush with these really stiff bristles that you can get into the burrs and really scrape it.
Is it plastic like a toothbrush, or is it like steel, like a stiffer material?
It's plastic. Okay. It's plastic for sure. Again, you don't want to like leave any metal behind.
Sure.
Because that can definitely screw up your grinder too. So it's these plastic bristles that really help.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So a good place to get started at home would be like toothbrush, light soap, a little water, and air dry, and
just, and then like at the end a clean rag just to try and get it and just rinse it out.
Okay.
Get rid of that soap taste.
Gotcha. Because that's always like, especially if I go to my parents' house and have coffee, that is my biggest thing, is I'm like, can you guys not taste this in your coffee maker? It tastes like burnt plastic. Like, it's that old, like I can't drink this.
Yeah,
so that's
Oh, coffee always scared me when I was with my grandma, because she would just drink Folgers, like black coffee. And I'm like, how do you do this?
Yeah, it's terrible.
And then I started, you know, I had to start working early mornings for the TV station that I worked for. And then I was like, I have to have something. And then I was finally introduced to like good coffee, like local roasters and things like that. And it makes such a difference. And what kind of beans or roasters do you guys look for in your products and when you're buying for the company?
So with our beans, we use a 3-bean blend from Colombia, El Salvador, and Brazil. And we have this Origins project that we have a whole social impact branch of our company. And one of the initiatives is to create relationships with those communities that we buy from. So, you know, we're not just like, there's beans, you know, ship them over, we'll roast them, call it good. But recognizing that all the way down the chain, there's an impact that we can have. So as much as we want to impact the people that are buying the drinks, we also want to make sure that we're having a meaningful relationship with the people that are supplying the product, right? Because the journey from the coffee bean coming off the tree as a cherry all the way to the cup can take up to a year's worth of work, man. And it's back-breaking freaking work, dude.
Sure.
So a couple years ago, Trav, one of the co-founders for the company, he got a chance to do Undercover Boss. Oh. And did you guys hear about that?
No.
Dude, really cool episode. Gives a really cool look at where his heart is, and you know, the things that we're trying to do now and keep up with. But one of the things he did was he went down to one of our suppliers and tried to get a job as a guy that was going to be planting crop and harvesting. And he just got blown away by like all the backbreaking work it takes to just get coffee, man. Mm-hmm. Just the bean before you even freaking roast it. And so learned a lot during that trip. And I think that was one of the things that kind of launched that initiative. We've seen some pretty cool stuff out of it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of people don't realize there is a berry that comes on that bean, and that berry is delicious, actually. Oh, yeah. They used to make a coconut water company called One Coconut Water, and they made a coffee fruit drink that was delicious, and then they just pulled it. I don't know why.
Oh, man. And that was your go-to. Yeah.
It was so good, because my neighbor was a sales rep for him, so I would come home or like
get hooked up,
sneak my way right into their garage and pop some of those and be like, okay, back to work.
Yeah, who knows, man? Who knows? But I think it's true that a lot of people don't know that it starts off as a cherry, right? Like this bright red fruit on a tree, and you're like, coffee fruit, like, doesn't really make sense. And then you see that like coffee starts off as a green bean before it even gets roasted.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever, I didn't realize that the green either. Like,
oh yeah. So you peel the fruit and then you husk the shell, and they dry it, pack it up, ship it, and then you roast it, and then grind it up, and then hot water, serve it up, as the most basic explanation
process.
Right. But I mean, that's what's cool about the roasting process too, right? It starts off as the green bean, and then you can roast it on a spectrum, and this is where the science just goes absolutely bananas, where I feel like I have no cred here.
Okay.
It's
give nuts. Us your take now.
So basically it's on a spectrum, right?
Sure.
Green beans, and then on the spectrum it goes all the way to let's say a really dark roast, like a French roast.
Almost
burnt, right? Yeah.
Okay.
But that's where, like, you know, different roasts come into play. You can do single origin stuff where it's just like one bean from one place. Or you can do the blends, which is like what we do, where it's like three different beans from three different places. And depending on what you're trying to accomplish with the flavor, you change which beans are doing what, because depending on where they grew, what elevation, like it's like
grapes and wine.
The chemistry gets involved, right?
It's absolutely bananas.
Yeah.
Not to name a different fruit and
not to confuse anyone with the other metaphors.
We're still talking about coffee. Right?
What I mean, offhand, do you know what that roasting process is like? Like, I mean, how hot are we getting and how long are we cooking for?
I wish I could tell you that stuff, okay. Man. It's a secret. No, but so we offer the three bean blend. That's just what we serve up in all of our espresso based drinks. That's what we use for our cold brew. But we also have this other product called white coffee. So on that spectrum, right? So you've got the green beans, and as the longer that you roast them, different heats and length of time will give you the different roasts. But we have the white coffee one is on the lighter end of the spectrum. So it's basically just like a really quick roast.
Okay.
But it's got a completely different flavor profile.
Interesting. More of that fruity taste instead of the...
Just put it up to your nose and got a good waft of it, it would smell more like hay or really earthy. It's really earthy, and the flavor is almost like tea.
Oh, like super mellow, kind of light.
Well, it's still pretty pungent, but very herbal, very earthy.
Interesting.
But the crazy part about it, right, is like, and I think there's still some debate towards this, right? So the longer that you roast a bean, The more you cook the oil off of the bean, which is also where you get caffeine from, right?
Okay.
So white coffee will have a different flavor profile and a different amount of caffeine with it as well.
It's going to be a more caffeinated
coffee. It's got less oils burnt off, right?
So they say,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah. It'll have more caffeine. But we offer that up as a product that of people that still want to have something like a coffee drink, but they maybe absolutely hate the flavor of coffee. So it's like, hey, I still want a mocha, but I don't want the coffee in it. And we're like, oh, dude, we'll get it hooked up. So white coffee, definitely worth the try.
Interesting.
It's not a massive product out there yet. But we still have it and it's pretty cool, but it's also really hard to grind up. So as far as equipment goes, it comes to us pre-ground.
Oh, wow.
So you probably need a stronger blade because it's not as
it's almost like
crispy
grinding,
as the dark roast bean.
It's almost like grinding rocks.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's super dense still. It's not been baked out to be kind of crumbly like a dark roast would be.
No, they can tear up burrs pretty quick.
Interesting.
So
let me backtrack on something. I think you're about to like change my perspective on coffee because like I'm the guy, I'm chasing like, I'm a dark roast guy or so I thought until what I think you just dropped on me. And I'm a caffeine guy. I'm like, I'm drinking it to get jacked up. Otherwise I'm not drinking it. And I think I'm a dark roast guy. Cause I was associating that like dark, bitter flavor with the caffeine.
Right.
But that's not the case.
No, not always.
Yeah. So should I be going for a lighter roast if I'm trying to get more caffeine? Is that,
well, this is where I think it gets a little complicated. Because like, I don't know, like the caffeine difference between a super dark roast and like a medium light roast, like there's probably not a massive difference there.
Okay. Okay.
But I mean, the white coffee is so, in comparison, under roasted.
Yeah.
That it just, you know,
It hits differently.
So yeah. I might be ordering white coffee next time.
Yeah, but
I
think should try some to do
it. I think you should give it a try, right? But because it's not as, because it's not, it's not as bitter. Just, you know, be wary of how sweet of a drink you get if you don't like sweet things because it doesn't cut through as much.
Interesting.
Yeah, it hides.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I'm giving it a shot, man.
Yeah. I say do it, man. Awesome. I say do it.
All right. So we've been jumping all over. I'm jacked up. I'm caffeinated in this conversation. Nick, you're awake now?
Yeah. I've finished this cold brew.
Perfect. Because
it's like four cups in one little can.
Let's go.
We've been popping all over. We talked about all this like coffee insider insight. We talked about flow. We talked about QSR. And I think the big thing like we keep coming back to is like people, you know, and this like sort of special attention to things. So where I'll kind of throw it to you, Matt, to like kind of, you know, have your soapbox here to take it out on is like, what's that special mix of people? Because like we're hearing everything right now. Places are like, we can't find the right type of people. I know every business, even us, you know, we're blessed to work on this podcast and culture. And we get this amazing crew. I get to work with Nick and Dre over here, all these awesome people. Like your take on finding the right person, because it sounds like that's the magic to all this science, right? You've got the right equipment. Right. You've got the flow. You got the process. But it comes down to the people at the end to make this all work.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going to throw it to you, man. Give me your...
You sure we got enough time for this?
Keep it tight. If I give you 5 minutes to just spit.
Oh, man. Well, this is something that, you know, as a company, we care super deeply about. If there's one thing that we probably talk about the most, it's this. And the word is culture that we use to describe it. And I mean, we have to go into the whole definition, right? And so culture for us definitely is things like love, family, relationships, personal accountability, character, leadership. When it comes down to hiring, what we're looking for is people that are willing to be a part of something that has a really big why behind it. So what we do at Dutch Bros isn't just about making good drinks, making them fast, and sending people on their way, right? Sometimes that's what customers value, but we want to meet that, right? But that's not the end element, right? We have a purpose of why we want to be in the communities that we're in. Like we want to be a value add. Like anytime a Dutch Bros pops up, we want it to be like I'm pumped this place is here. So when it comes to bringing people onto our team, people that are willing to say, I'm down to walk up to a complete stranger, look him in the eyes and say, hey man, how's it going? And then be ready for whatever answer comes back at you. Whether it's, oh, I'm good, man. Can I get a medium hot mocha? Or, I'm doing all right, man. and still leaving that door open to be like, is everything all right? Sometimes they give you, yeah, yeah, I'm okay, man. And you just got to serve it up like, hey, I hear you. You got this. What can I do for you today? Or on the other end, be able to crack that door open just a little bit more and be like, you all right, man? You want to talk about it? So that's, I mean, we're looking for something like that. Because at the end of the day, man, we're just people serving people. And we have to remember that, right? Like the customers are flesh and blood, man. They're not just like a cold statistic.
Sure.
they're like, they've got things going on that we don't know about, man. And so it's one of the things I absolutely love about this job. And what one of the things that drew me in originally is just that you can make regulars, right? Mm. And most of the time it comes out of serving their need, right? So whether they want to, you know, they want something, they know what they want it now. Some people don't know what they want it right now. People that don't know what they want, but they doesn't matter how long it takes to get it. Like, you know, you find, so you're serving that need, but then once you serve that need well enough, you know, with consistency over time, people want to come back because they're like, oh yeah, my homie's going to hook me up, man. Like not with, you know, free drinks all the time, but like, but just like, oh yeah, I know that's Ted. And I know Ted gets a medium hot Americano, two sugars, one stevia with one scoop of cream and two ice cubes, right? Be able to look out in line and know that that's Ted before he even gets to the window. So people that are willing to be a part of that journey, is a pretty big part of it.
How do you identify that quality?
First impressions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's how they hit you when you first talk to them.
Yeah. And this is where, it gets a little wild. Because sometimes you have to take a chance on people.
Sure.
Right. But I think there's different approaches to finding the right people, but, I think it breaks down into a couple different elements when you're trying to find people for your team. One, if you're just starting out, and there's no, understanding of what your job experience is like, that journey is going to be a little different, right? You have to build that up. So you have to make your values known, and then you've got to follow through on them through and like over and over and over again. Right. And so some areas that's really, you know, maybe the shop's been around for 10, 15 years, 30 years. So that work experience has built enough word of mouth to be like, oh yeah, hell yeah, I want a job here. Right. But then you've got other areas where it's like, well, I seen you guys on TikTok and those drinks look pretty cool.
Okay.
But then you've got to build up that experience of what it's like to work at Dutch Bros and build that consistency. So it's like, hey, we care about our crew. We care about our customer. We care about serving people well. We care about serving this customer well. And so I feel like I'm going off on another tangent here, but I'll bring it back around, I promise. So we're building that consistency out. But when it comes to interviewing those people, talking about it right up front and being like, hey man, like tell me, you know, what was something that you went through, something difficult that you went through and how you overcame it. If you're looking for the right people, just ask the right questions, right? Know what you care about. And then
know what kind of response you're looking for.
Yeah.
If they can hit it in that ball, right?
As soon as someone rolls up to the table, right? We're the service industry, right? And if you're a line buster outside in the line, the qualities that you're looking for are as soon as you walk up to a car, you don't know who that person is. How are you going to act? How do you hold yourself? Those are the things that we're looking for. Right. So again, that fits with our values, right? So you have to know what you want. You have to know what you stand for. You got to ask the right questions, formulate the right questions that are going to get you the right answers. Or ask them the right questions and you can justify what the answers are. Based off what your values are. But then, you know, have people understand that, like, this isn't always going to be an easy job because we're in the service industry, right? So, I mean, you're going to have really awesome customers and you can also have some experiences that you have to, like, you know, like, work through. It's not always going to be easy.
Yeah, that's a tough part for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
holding that tongue.
I've been there. I think customer service just suits you well in life. Just to get some experience on dealing with people and learning how to deal yourself. And like you said, kind of knowing who you are and what you are and how to bring the right energy and kind of set the tone and interacting with people.
Yeah.
Cause it doesn't matter what field you're in, that's part of it.
You're going to deal with people.
Absolutely.
That's it.
So we've kind of gone all over today, guys. It's been a pretty enlightening and, you know,
caffeinated show.
Yeah. And Matt, I just want to thank you for joining us, man. Cause we touched everything from better coffee and care at home to the idea of like flow within a QSR to like people and what it takes to really deliver on something. So thanks for joining us, man. And this is where I usually pitch it over, say, plug it up. What do you want people to know about Dutch Bros and what should they be looking out for?
Oh man, if you guys know there's a Dutch Bros near you guys, please go check it out. Download the app so you guys can get those points and work your way to some free coffees. But then get to know some of those baristas, man. We've got some really cool people that work for us. And you know, they're all part of this thing that we're doing, and they're not just there to make drinks, they're there to serve what you want. So anything that you think you want, we can probably make it. And they're going to do it for you guys because that's what they want to do. So come see us. We'll hook it up.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, Matt. That was great.
Yeah.
Pleasure.
This has been the Appliance Educator Podcast, brought to you by Z-Line Kitchen and Bath. Be sure to like, subscribe, and follow at Appliance Educator for more tips and tricks and advice to keep your home running at optimal performance. If you have any ideas or topics you'd like to hear on future episodes of the show, leave us a comment. Appliance Educator, signing off.